This is episode 14 of season 4 of The Bad Apples. My name is Klaatu. This is a Linux podcast. It's about the Linux kernel, the GNU utilities on top of said kernel. It's about the Unix way of doing things, and, well, more specifically, this episode is all about the listener feedback. Now, listener feedback episodes are generally things that I used to not like, but they've turned out to be so functional that I just can't help but do a couple of them every season, apparently. They actually really work out. You just consolidate all the listener feedback and read them and comment on them. And that way I don't feel like I'm limited as in terms of what I can comment on and how long I can go on for and stuff like that. So it's good. If you're not digging them, if you find them exceedingly boring and would rather have them sprinkled in with during other episodes, let me know, and I'll make more of an effort to do that, since that is traditionally kind of the way that I prefer. But I'm trying to emulate the Going Linux podcast right now. They do really entertaining listener feedback episodes, so hopefully I can kind of be like that, do a good episode with lots of listener feedback, and still keep it interesting and stuff like that. So I'm going to read as much listener feedback as I possibly can here. The problem, I guess, one of the problems is that two episodes ago, 4.11 and 4.12, so that's 3 and 2 episodes or whatever, I had read some listener feedback, and the sound quality was so exceedingly bad, and then stupidly I erased the file, and so I have no idea what emails I read and what I did not read. So chances are, if you've emailed me within the last month, I'd say from July 26 up until August 26-ish, there's a good chance that I'm going to skip over your email by accident. It's not because I didn't find your email interesting, it's not because I didn't want to respond to it, not because I don't find you, dear listener, of the utmost importance. I simply screwed up, so hopefully that's not going to happen, and hopefully I'm not going to repeat stuff too much. The things that I feel like I might be repeating, I'll just kind of go through quickly. So one of these guys is Peter from the Netherlands. Not Peter64 from Australia. Peter from the Netherlands. And Peter is using Mutt, and he is using it well, and he is using it on Slackware, I believe. I might have read his email out already, so I'm going to go through it quickly. The point is that Peter is telling me how to use Mutt because I had expressed a desire to learn Mutt rather than Pine. Not that I have a problem with Pine, it's just that I've got a couple of problems with... Well, I don't even have any problems. It's just I'm not clear on the licensing of Alpine. Not 100% sure about what that's all about. But also, Pine relies so heavily on Pico and Pico style keyboard shortcuts and key bindings and things like that. So inevitably, I'm trying to superimpose Vim things on Pine. And while I can use Vim as my alternate editor, I can't make it just respond to all my Vim key bindings that I'm aware of. So if I'm mistaken, you can let me know. But anyway, so I followed Peter's sort of tutorial or how-to that he emailed me on Mutt. And specifically, you have to set up fetch mail, and I think possibly send mail. I don't quite remember if that's correct or not. And it was working great. It was working fine. It was working as expected, like one or two times, and then suddenly it broke. And I'm not sure why it broke. So I'm going to continue testing that on my Slackware machine, see what happens. But thanks, Peter, for the tutorial. And Peter and I are both saying, oh, we should do a tutorial on this. Peter says, I'll do a Hacker Public Radio episode on it. And I say, I'll do a blog post on it. And so far, neither of us have really made good on that. I haven't done it because I don't feel like I know it yet, so I don't want to go advertising something I really am ignorant about. But Peter can certainly do an HPR episode if he finds the time to do it. I'm sure it'll be very helpful. And otherwise, I'll try to do a blog post about it at some point. Maybe a Bad Apple segment on it, once I have it figured out, basically. So, don't expect that for another year or so, I'm sure. But yeah, so Mutt seems pretty cool. Just need to know a little bit more about how to use it. Skirlet from the Fedora Reloaded podcast, my co-host, emailed me and said, Hi, Klaatu. I'm a big fan. Thanks for the show. Specifically, she's talking about Season 1, because I told her, since she is so entrenched in OS X so often for her day job of kind of graphic design and, I guess, some web design now, I told her to go back and listen to Season 1, because everything I did within Season 1 was about how to get around Apple stuff. If you've got a friend, if you know anyone using OS X and they've expressed interest in that whole mysterious Unix thing that Apple keeps advertising, or the cool Linux thing that you keep talking about, you can refer them to Season 1, and I believe the link for that, I don't really know, actually. But thanks, Skrillet, for saying that you like my show. Paul Frields from the Fedora Project wrote me, and he's talking about Pulsecaster, and this is his Pulse Audio Interceptor. You can use Pulsecast to make phone calls, or rather to be the patch bay, I will say, for anything coming in and out of your audio system on your computer. If you're on a conference call on, say, talk.fedoraproject.org, and you want to record both sides of the conversation, you can say, okay, Pulsecaster, listen in to the incoming audio and record that to a stream, and then listen to my audio coming in through the microphone or whatever, and record that to a stream. And then you've got a way to locally record both sides of the conversation, which is a really, really great thing. This is definitely something that Linux needs and has needed and continues to need. Pulsecaster is something that could use beta testing and all that other good stuff, so give that a shot if you want to. It's called Pulsecaster. I'll include a link to it in the show notes if I remember. If not, internet searches are wonderful, wonderful things. The Ohio Linux Fest is drawing nigh, and I've gotten lots of emails from different podcasters about a little event that we're going to hold on Friday called Podcasting Hosts and Listeners Unite, or something like that. And it's about, or rather, it's an event that hopes to bring together a whole bunch of podcasters and a whole bunch of podcast listeners and get them into the same room at the same time in real life, IRL, and maybe something magical will happen, or maybe we'll just sit there and do what we do in IRC, which is just chat about random nonsense. Whatever happens, it'll be a cool event. Please do, if you're going to show up at Ohio Linux Fest, try to show up on Friday. Friday's going to be a cool day. I said it on Linux Cranks. I'm going to say it again here. This is not something, it's not an extra day tagged onto the Ohio Linux Fest. It is an extra day, but I mean, it's not just like, and I guess since we're going to be there on Friday, let's do some stuff. This is cool stuff. This is the anarchist Ohio Linux Fest Friday. This is the day where anyone can do whatever they want to, basically. You can come in, you can look at, you can listen to the talks, you can have birds of feather meetings. You know, it's just whatever you want to, it's fine. You don't have to be a paying member or whatever. That, to me, is very appealing. Show up on Friday if possible. I think that things are going on from like 1 o'clock to 9 o'clock that day, and then there's a pre-party at 9 or something like that. Just go to ohiolinux.org. You can see all the schedules and stuff. I am also giving a talk on Friday at, 3 or 4 5 or something, on editing video in Blender is the title of the talk. I'm not sure if I'll concentrate exclusively on Blender or not. Just kind of depends on the crowd. I like to be flexible. But I do want to cover some, you know, video kind of stuff on Linux. I think it's an important topic. I think it's something that people will be interested in. So if you want to come see me talk or listen to me talk or contribute or whatever, show up on Friday. Come to the talk. That was from my friend Ron, who I've never actually met, but he keeps emailing me all these great articles, and I mean, frankly, I'm at the point where if it wasn't for him, I'd be so far behind on all kind of geek news, it would be embarrassing. But he sent me a document, or a link, rather, to a document on Eric S. Raymond's site, sort of a famous post, and you've probably possibly already seen it. If not, it's called the Halloween Documents, and it's on catb.org/ESR/Halloween, HALLOWEEN. And it is supposedly a whole bunch of, leaked memos or leaked emails and stuff from out of Redmond, Microsoft, whatever. So whether these things are true or exaggerated or just verbatim, I really don't know. I don't suppose anyone could ever really know, or maybe someone does know. I don't know. So you can read them. It's interesting. I mean, even if it is fake, this is exactly, you know, what Microsoft is thinking. I mean, it's definitely a good a good example, I'm sure, of what is going through their heads, you know, and what's kind of like what they think about Linux and this whole free software movement or open source movement or whatever you call it, whatever they call it. Tim's email about Midnight Commander, I read. That was the one salvageable email that I did get to read for I think two episodes now ago. So I'm gonna skip that one. Some guy named Mixtape emailed me, and he says he's writing me just a quick note to thank you for the fine work that you do with the Bad Apples, which is certainly appreciated. I mean, I'm saying it's appreciated. He's saying it's fine work, and I'm saying, well, thank you. And he says, I've probably been rocking the Bad Apples OGG feed since season 2, so that makes him one of the older listeners, you know, the long-time listeners officially. He says, recently he appreciated the command line utilities, especially the ones talking about multimedia, and he is saying that he would like to mention, I guess you would say, ECA sound, ECA sound, and what this is a robust command line driven multi-track recorder. It's exceptionally fast and stable. It has fully, it's fully integrated with jack support, and you can find more information at eca.cx/ECA sound. Really, really cool app, ECA sound. You need to check it out if you are doing multimedia kinds of stuff, or if you're interested in doing that kind of stuff. It's just really cool. I have barely touched on its ability, its capabilities and everything, so I'm not going to necessarily try to get into it right now, but thanks a lot, Mixtape. That is a really good tip. I'm really eager to check all that out and kind of get to know it and stuff like that. Ron again wrote me an email about installing Chromium on Fedora 10 or 11. And, of course, Chromium is the open source version. I hesitate to say free software because I don't know the license, but open source certainly version, I guess, or the basis upon which Chrome is built. This kind of thing always really does puzzle me because, I mean, why bother doing an open source version of something and then making bits and pieces of it not open source, and, you know, distribute the non-open source stuff and then keep the open source stuff in the background. It's just, to me, you know, from where I stand, which is, of course, again, non-programmer point of view, that kind of thing. But, I mean, from where I'm sitting, that sounds like more confusion, more work, more, a more complex Git repository, basically, or whatever you're using to keep all that code kind of merged and stuff. I don't know. I don't get it. I really don't. I mean, it's kind of, I mean, you know, you hear about the web, Apple WebKit, right? And then you also still hear about KHTML going on. Well, this kind of sounds like something asking for trouble, you know? I mean, the WebKit exists, yes, but there are certain people who are just, I mean, the developers are just like, well, why do I want to work with Apple, you know? Why do I want to contribute code for them? I don't get to steer the project, you know, I'm at the mercy of Apple. It's like they own the project now because I'm contributing to them. So they maintain KHTML on their own, separate from, you know, WebKit. So it exists, it is used, and yeah, it's separate. Kind of sounds like something that would be similar to me. I mean, Chrome versus Chromium, that kind of deal. You could kind of see Chromium going off in one direction and Chrome going off in another. Whether that'll happen or not, I don't know. I don't. Maybe I'm just totally wrong. Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. Well, I certainly don't know what I'm talking about, but just logic. But anyway, if you want to install Chromium on Fedora 10 or 11, you can do so. It's a Google repository, I believe. Nope, sorry, it's a Fedora people. It's a Fedora people project, meaning that it's, you know, some maintainer within the Fedora project is kind of maintaining literally a Chromium repository. So you add their private repository to your repo list, and then you do a yum install Chromium, and then you have Chromium. Have I done it? No, not really. I might eventually, but I'm not that interested in Chromium right now, and I know. But the separate tabs, and it's so much faster, and all this other good stuff. I will try it when I'm ready. Right now, I'm fine with the three browsers that I use. I don't really have a desire to have Chromium in the mix right now. Nothing against Chromium. I have never used it, so it's not that I don't want to try it. It's just I don't feel like it right now. So there you go. Thistle Web emailed me and said that there is a command line interface RSS feed reader called NewsButer. Newsbuter. It's the default, I guess, in Crunchbang. So that's where he came across it at first. And he says it's really simple, and it's just www.newsbuter. I really don't know how to say that, but newsbuter.org. And I guess it does what it probably says it does. It's an RSS feed reader for command line interfaces. So I will be checking that out. I have to admit that he emailed me that on August 8th. And I've been so busy with Ohio Linux Fest planning that I just completely forgot about it, you know, and didn't install it. I haven't looked at my RSS feeds in ages right now. I'm so busy with a lot of different things, actually. A couple of articles that I'm writing for publication in some magazines, a new job that I've secured part-time, but good, and then the Ohio Linux Fest planning. So I'll get to it, though. Lost in Bronx emailed me, and he said he really, really liked the How to Compile on Linux episode. I think it was 4x09, but yeah, he says he's listened to that episode twice, and he never listens to anything twice, even to the ones that make him laugh. So that's a big compliment, and I certainly, certainly appreciate it, and I certainly am glad that it's helping him and whoever else it might be helping. I know that compiling software can be a very, very confusing thing sometimes. It's confusing for everyone, and, I mean, it's just, like, it's guaranteed, even if you've compiled software once a week or something, you're going to forget to install. You know, you're going to sit there being compiling something, and it's going to say, oh, you don't have, Pygame, SDL installed. And you're going to look, and you have SDL installed, you don't understand. And then you remember, oh, yeah, I need SDL-dev or devel, and then it compiles. You know, I mean, it's weird little things like that that just kind of trip you up. So I think getting a lot of the tips and kind of the how-to stuff all in one episode like that, yeah, I hope it did help. It certainly helped me to kind of go through it over my mind. I make fewer stupid mistakes now compiling. I make lots of stupid mistakes, but when compiling, I make fewer stupid mistakes. So that's a good thing. Ken Fallon wrote in, and he says, no, he's not listening anymore. So I figured as much. Although it's puzzling as to how he knew I said that if he's not listening anymore. He must have heard it through the grapevine, I don't know. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, in a couple episodes ago, I was kidding around saying that Ken Fallon wasn't listening anymore. So he emailed me and said, correct, he's not listening. Very, very humorous guy, that Mr. Fallon. Let's see, there's a another one, actually, from Ron. And it's really cool. This project really, really got me excited, and you should see this. You should get this. This is one of those cool, like, free ebooks, which, you know, I mean, there is a tendency. You see free and you see ebook, and it's just like, well, why shouldn't I grab it? I mean, I'm going to grab that thing because it's free. It's not going to take up any physical space. It's so easy. It's a couple of clicks away. And then you kind of forget about it. All right, so here's what I've done, and it's not a bad idea. It's certainly working for me. I've got all my ebooks on my backup drive, just, you know, for backup, obviously. But then I also have one copy of it on a thumb drive, which I have on me at all times. And then I also have one copy of it on my Nokia. I mean, no matter where I am, no matter what I'm doing, if I need something to read, I can open my Nokia and start reading up on, you know, whatever it is. And this ebook in particular is a really, really cool one. It's called the Og Theora Cookbook, and it is pretty much what it sounds like. It's a book about Og Theora and the different things you can do with it. So check that one out. Ron also sent me an email containing a movie trailer about extraterrestrials. I don't know what he's trying to say there. It was on YouTube. I don't have Flash installed, and Ganache just doesn't want to play nice with YouTube, so I went there, I saw the page, I didn't see the foot in the media, so. Russ Wenner from the Techie Geek posted on this website somewhere out there, actually it's called freelinuxbox.org, I believe. Just listen to the Techie Geek, he's got a little promo for it at the beginning of his latest shows. But it's a really cool site, and it's a site where you can post your Linux box on the internets, and you can say, okay, I'm going to send this box to you, it's got Linux on it. And, you know, it's for free. You pay the shipping, and that's all it takes. This is a really, really cool way of getting rid of a Linux box because, I mean, so far I haven't had any problems with that, actually. I mean, I've been able to find people who know someone who needs a computer, and I've been able to give them away. But what he's got is a server that he was trying to get rid of. It's just like a Dell, you know, 833 megahertz or something like that server. It's nothing fancy. It's got like a RAID, array in there. So that should be cool. I'm going to set up either Slackware or Fedora on it and, you know, quite possibly set it up and point it out onto the, you know, into the world and see what happens. I don't have any illusion about it being secure and not hacked. I'm going to give it a shot. You know, I think it'll be an interesting experiment. I'm going to see what I can do with a server. I've been meaning to play around with a server for quite a while. You know, I had one for a little while before I left my old job on the West Coast. And when I moved from the West to the East Coast, I literally brought, as is my habit, like 4 backpacks of belongings. Didn't bring the server, but and someone else did inherit that, so it was okay. But hopefully I'll be able to do something with this one and get something kind of interesting going. And either way, big thanks to Rust and big thanks to Linuxbox, you know, freelinuxbox.org. I think that's a great service, and I think Rust did a good thing by posting the server on there, and I certainly look forward to trying that out. Ron again emailed me with commandlinefoo.com. If you don't know the website commandlinefoo.com, you should go there. I've been there. I knew of it before he emailed it to me, actually. I'd heard about it at my 2600 meeting. Someone had just mentioned it off the cuff, and so I checked it out. It is really cool. It's not just a straight, like, here's how to use a command line, or here's, you know, the most common command line commands you will need for such and such. It's really kind of a specialized, like, here's a really cool set of commands that you can run to accomplish such and such. So it's a pretty neat kind of hardcore site. So it's not for the person saying, gee, you know, what commands are out there for me. It's more of a person who's saying, I know a lot of commands. I know how to shell script a little bit. Now, how can I really wield these commands together to make something cool happen? And so that's kind of what commandlinefoo.com is. Ron also sent me a really neat link for a place, well, I mean, not for a place, but for the campaign PlayOgg, which, of course, is the FSF campaign to promote Ogg Vorbis, which I think is great. I don't really know what these quote-unquote campaigns ever do. You know, I guess they are quote-unquote to raise awareness of something, but I don't know. They're good to have. If someone Googles what is Ogg, you know, maybe that will come up as a hit and they'll see that view of things, you know, that kind of a fair view of what Ogg is and its virtues, rather than some random forum posting saying, I hate Ogg, QuickTime doesn't play it, it sucks, you know? Yeah, maybe that's what that sort of thing is for. Either way, PlayOgg exists. It's certainly not a bad campaign to check out. I actually emailed the guy, Wilson Holmes, I think is his name, about the campaign, because he was like the organizer of that or something. And he's a really nice guy. It turns out he was actually involved with the founding of Miro, the Miro player. So, and that's a great project. If you haven't ever tried Miro, you've got to. For a while, that was television for me. I mean, I had no TV, literally no physical TV, and I would sit around in front of one of my computers running Miro, and I just had all these channels of, you know, free content, free video content, random stuff, Hack 5, Hack TV. The Source was in there, of course. Aaron Newcomb's The Source. Pure Pwnage, that was a really good one. You know, just lots of different shows. And they were just so good. So, yeah, I mean, and Miro kind of brings it all to you just right there to your little player. And it feels like a TV or a radio or both. I think it's just getmiro.com or getmiro.org or something. That's part of spreading open media. That's part of playing Ogg. You know, these are important moves toward really, really promoting and letting the world see that the open stuff is really good and entire subcultures can thrive off of that. So that's really cool stuff. But I've said all this before, so I'm not going to repeat myself any more than I already have. Monster B from Linux Cranks wrote me, and he had found a really cool little project called Nano CMS, and that was obviously Nano Content Management System, right? And it was a nice little CMS system that he was kind of playing around with on the Linux Cranks site. And somehow the site disappeared. Not the Linux Crank site, but the project itself, Nano CMS. The site went down, or like has gone away. It's like up for sale or something. By all appearances, it would seem that Nano CMS is kind of dead unless someone picks it up and goes with it, or if it just somehow moved and we just aren't quite aware of it. But he was kind of looking around as an alternative, and he found one called FlatPress, which is I guess it's technically a non-GNU project. But it's associated, I believe, somehow with, you know, that whole GNU. I guess it might be hosted on Savannah or non-GNU or something like that. But it's definitely GPL is the point. And the really cool thing is that there's no database. It's all text files. So your blog or your content or whatever, it just exists. I mean, it's a super easy install, and it just exists in, you know, flat text files. It's that easy, which is really cool, and I definitely am going to check this out. My new part-time gig, one of the things I'm doing for it to make it a little bit easier or whatever, is establish a sort of a website hub for all the people I'm going to be dealing with. There are about 16 or 20 members, or people rather, who need to come to this site and kind of get content off, or at least keep track of stuff. So I'll be using FlatPress for that, most certainly. So I will... I'll probably be able to report back on that in due time, but it does sound like a really cool project. And that's just flatpress.org, so you can check that out. It's not all listener feedback. I've got some tips, but before we get into that, let's have a cup of coffee. Okay, KDE 4 time. So, quick tip for KDE 4 people. There are global key bindings that you can define in KDE 4, and these are really, really handy, and I use them all the time, and it's really easy to set up. So, if you're running KDE 4, you simply go to the system settings, and then you go into, well, actually, there are two places that you're going to be able to go. There's one called Input Actions, and there's one called Keyboard and Mouse. So we'll go first to the keyboard and mouse. So on the left column of this window, you'll see the icons for instance, global shortcuts. So if you select that, then you'll see on the right-hand side, you'll see a menu, or a pop-up menu, rather, for the different areas of the computer, you know, the things that have presets already. Maybe not the key binding set for, but they have actions available, like KWin, and KMix and things like that. So if you want, you know, to assign a certain key for volume up and down, you can do that in the KMix menu, or in or if you want to assign a certain keyboard combination for switching to different desktops, you would do that in KWin, things like that. So that's one area that you can assign global shortcuts. So that one got certain predefined actions, and all you have to do is click on the place where it's, you know, where it shows you that you can change the keyboard shortcut to it, and then press the keyboard shortcut combination that you want it to become, and that's it. That's all you have to do. I find this especially helpful for, like, the run command thing, you know, the K-runner thing. That's, by default, Alt F2, which to me is a useless keyboard combination because, well, F keys are useless in general. I cannot stand them. They're way up there at the top of the keyboard. I don't care the size of your keyboard. I don't care. They're just way up there. They're way away from that home row, you know, the ASDF row. The point is that F keys are evil and they're inconvenient. So Alt F2 does nothing for me. If I'm typing and suddenly I realize I need to run some kind of command or do a calculation or whatever, the easiest way to do that is Meta, or Apple key on my MacBook anyway, Meta spacebar. So I reassign KRunner to Meta Spacebar. And, of course, being a pretty much a lifelong Apple user, I mean, even now, even trying to get away from Apple computers, I keep ending up with them. So I've got two MacBooks to one triple EPC. My hands, my, what do they call it, muscle memory, it's set on that Meta key, on the Apple key. I've adjusted pretty well to the Control-C, Control-V, copy-paste, you know, controlled this or that. But a lot of other keyboard shortcuts, I'm just really used to having the thumb kind of just switch quickly from the space bar over to my meta key. Now, I know I could reassign the meta key probably to be the control key or something like that, and that's a little bit drastic for me. I don't want to go to that length, because then I'll never learn the control thing. I'll never have that in my set of tricks, so I don't want to do that. But I do want to utilize the meta key a little bit more than the default setting in Linux is, I guess. So I assign meta, for instance, meta D, will bring me a dolphin window. Meta K will give me a conqueror window. And this is kind of to emulate the action of a meta and then a keystroke in macOS Finder will do certain things that I'm used to. So Apple N would have given me a new Finder window. I can adapt enough to know that Apple D will give me a dolphin window, or Apple K will give me a conqueror window. So I like those a lot. Now, that kind of thing, there's not really a preset action for that, okay? There's not something that just says, okay, launch a dolphin window or launch a new conqueror window. So what you do in that case is you go over to the input action, and input action is really cool because it's just whatever you want. You can right click in the left column to create a new input action, name it something that makes sense to you, and then on the right hand column of this window you will see a place for a comment, and more importantly a place for the keyboard shortcut, and then a place for what command you want that keyboard combination to initiate. So for launching a new dolphin window, I simply created a new action in the left-hand column, said, okay, I want this to be my dolphin command, and then over in the, you know, the corresponding space for that, I set meta D for the keyboard shortcut, and the action for that to have is just user bin / dolphin. That's it. Same goes for Conqueror. I could do meta K, or I do meta K for Conqueror, and I think the default view that I have for Conqueror is the web browser view, but certainly if you wanted to launch Conqueror in its file manager mode, I'm sure there's some option in Conqueror to do that, so you could do that as well. Let's see, what are some of the other, so that's the how-to. I mean, that's how it is done, so now you know if you didn't know already. The meta key is, I think, underused in most, I guess, desktop environments by default, so I like to kind of give it a little bit more work, especially since my thumb is just trained to jump right off the space bar and hit meta and then some other key, you know, for my keyboard shortcuts. So that's really handy for me. But the other ones that I've got set up, I guess Apple P I have for, because there's no print screen button on a MacBook, on the Mac keyboard. I think on a MacBook Pro there might be some kind of combination where you can maybe get a print screen, but I actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't think there is. I think I've seen it on some Apple keyboard at some point, although I could be making that up. The point being that I don't have a print screen, and print screen was the default action for, or the default button for the action of taking a screenshot. So what I did was I did Apple P just for, you know, print screen, and then I realized that didn't really make sense either, so I did Apple Shift 3, which would be the Mac shortcut. Apple Shift 3 would take your full screenshot, and then Apple Shift 4 would give you the opportunity to take just a region of that, of the screen, and then if you hit spacebar after Apple Shift 4, you can actually just take a particular window under a cursor screenshot. So all that is obviously just wrapped up in K-Snapshot, which is fine with me. Problem is I need to get to K-Snapshot quickly, so Apple Shift 3 wasn't working for some reason. I don't know why, to be honest. I really don't. It should work, I guess, but it doesn't. So just Apple 3 is what I've set for the screenshot. And both of those I've been able to remember quite well. And it's just a lot easier for me to hit. Well, it's not easier, it's just that I don't have a print screen button, so that's kind of nice. Now, print screen, honestly, that's something I could probably assign to an F key and be okay with, because that's not something you hit all the time. But even so, it's just my muscle memory says Apple 3 is for printing, for print screen. Control-Alt arrow keys, either left or right or up or down, that's what I'm using for changing over to a different desktop. I don't find, again, the F key thing where you can hit, like, I don't know, it's not Control-Alt-F. There's some keyboard combination where you can switch to desktop number 1 by hitting, you know, something F1. And I'm not talking about TTY, so that's not it. But there is something else that does that, that I don't find useful. But Control-Alt and then the arrow keys over or up or down, that seems like a really good keyboard combination to me. And then Apple W I've got assigned to just close a window. So any window that I want closed, I hit Apple W and it closes that window. I think I must have done that. Well, I did that because on Mac, that's what it is, Apple W to close a window. I think I might have really started to miss that possibly. I think there are some applications that just, I think in order to close the window, they want you, there is always this question whether it was like control Q or if it was like control W or something, or maybe there wasn't, on some application there wasn't the option to do that at all. You had to go into the file menu and actually say, okay, I want to exit, something like that, or maybe I'm making that up. Point is, I like having Apple W for closing the window. It seems to be kind of helpful to my, I guess, probably muscle memory again. But that is that's about all that I can think of that I have on my keyboard shortcuts. Although there are more, I just can't think of any off the top of my head, and they're not that important anyway. At least now you know how to assign them for yourself if you're using KDE 4. So try that out. So this is a fairly useless segment, but if you haven't guessed, I rather like sci-fi. I'm kind of a sci-fi fan. I read a lot of it. I watch a fair amount of it. I think about it, so I like sci-fi. And because I'm, I guess, a geek, a lot of the sci-fi, sort of the aspect of sci-fi that I like is the technology aspect, the computer stuff. So I have been watching not reruns, but, you know, like on DVD, of Voyager, Star Trek Voyager. And one of the things that I've just been really shaking my head at, and of course proverbially annoying, you know, anyone else who is watching the show with me, but it just whenever they talk about technology and things like that, sometimes it's just so completely ridiculous and so obviously to serve the plot. And of course I do understand this. Number one, writers aren't necessarily computer experts, and number two, if you are a writer and you are a computer expert, sometimes you just have to sacrifice reality or practicality for story. So I'm not saying that I don't understand what they could be thinking. It's just that sometimes it is really hard to swallow because it's just like so absurd. And to wit, one of the things that they seem to have just completely gotten wrong is that Voyager apparently is based completely on Windows. I mean, that's the only answer, because some of the technological limitations and quirks that they have in the Voyager universe is just so ridiculous. If you go back and watch the shows, if you look at the way that they have to issue commands to the main computer, I don't mean the way they say computer, do such and such. I mean like when they're at their little consoles. If they want to do something directly from the engineering console, then they have to like get up out of their seat on the bridge, go to deck whatever, you know, and go to the engineering and physically be there to issue the command at that terminal. Sometimes to the detriment and actual death of the crew member doing it. You know, there have been more than a few times where someone's standing at a computer and they're saying, get away from the computer, it's going to blow. And they're like, no, I have to issue this command from, I have to override the plasma injectors. And so they have to do that at the computer right there next to the plasma injectors that are about to explode. Seems like a very bad idea. Something that probably a little bit of SSHing, heck, even a telnet, you know, I mean, if you don't want the overhead, something that you can issue a command just maybe 2 meters away from that particular console. Another thing that they seem to have real problems with is the emergency medical hologram, who is apparently not a portable application. The emergency medical hologram, of course, is the doctor. He goes through a couple of different names, but you know, he's that hologram doctor that they have in sick bay because their real doctor like died. So you know, you've got this emergency medical hologram, and at a couple of different times they say, okay, we're gonna take your program with us to this new place or whatever, and he says, oh, you can't take me with you because I'm I'm so integrated into the rest of the ship's systems that I can't be removed. So apparently he has his entire knowledge, you know, I think they say it's something like, what do they call it, like 24 gigaquads of information, and this is all apparently just inextricable from the rest of the system. Seems like a horrible idea. I mean, anyone ever thought of, I don't know, a database for this kind of information, or even just a .conf file, you know, the emergency medical hologram .conf. You could put it in the slash etc directory, and we could just, at least with root access, we could grab it and take it with us. But no, apparently not. And speaking of root access, the security codes that they use on Voyager are just overridden, you know, without so much as authorization. I mean, anyone can apparently override anyone else's security code, obviously as the plot demands, but you'll hear people issuing commands to the computer, and it will say, permission denied, you do not have access for this or whatever, and it turns out that, like, you know, the emergency medical hologram has changed the permission, or just some random person's changed the permission to access the actual computer. Very easy to pwn the Voyager. And then the other thing, and then I promise I'll end the segment, is the concept of a cherooted environment, or something like a cherooted environment. The holodeck, even in Next Generation, if you ever saw, you know, a lot of Next Generation episodes, the holodeck can just take over the ship at will. I mean, if a holodeck character wants to take over the ship, there is no problem with that. They have, not only do they seem to have root access to all of the ship's functions, but sometimes, you know, they can just get up and walk out of the holodeck and shoot people or whatever they want to do. Granted, these are malfunctions, but it's a lot harder to malfunction in this way if you've got a cheroot or something like that, where, you know, through the hologram, the root directory is their own, you know, the holodeck. There is no main computer as far as they know. But the way that it apparently is set up is such that, in, like I say, in a couple of different scenarios, the holodeck has been able to just reach right out of its little field of existence, its little directory, and just start manipulating other ship functions that are completely unrelated to the holodeck. So SE Linux for Voyager might be a really, really good idea. Heck, I mean, just Linux at all would be a good idea for Voyager. But apparently that's not what they're using. They're definitely using something other than a sensible and modular and portable environment. I just thought that was funny. And it's one of those things that you can't really... and this is... I mean, I should have given this segment to Deep Geek. This is his territory at this point. But, I mean, you know, it's funny to be watching something and actually knowing something of which they speak and really knowing that they're just not making any sense, or that we're doomed. We're all doomed in the future. If that's the way it's going to be, we're all in trouble. Hopefully that's just a possible reality, and the real reality, the one that we're headed on, is the one where Linux succeeds enough, at least, so that our starships can run sensibly. I do believe that's about all I've got for this episode, folks, so I'm going to wrap it up. This has been Bad Apple. My name is Klaatu. Need to reach me, you can reach me at Klaatu at Hacker Public Radio. Reach me at Klaatu at linuxcranks.info. The Bad Apple website is thebadapple.info. There's not a whole lot on there right now, but show notes, things like that, is there. Og feeds and index pages for the old seasons, so check that out if you need it. And other than that, just have fun on Linux, and I'll see you next week.
Listening to Hacker Public Radio? Really? You need to listen to Hacker Public Radio. for your daily dose of community-created content, technical tips, super elite hacker how-tos, gaming and gadget reviews, and much, much more.
Oh my God!
It's Hacker
Public Radio! Catch it Monday through Friday at hackerpublicradio.com.
How do you do? Could I speak to a salesman?
Yes, just a moment.
McIntosh, Palmer speaking.
Hi, Mr. Palmer.
Yes.
How are you? This is Bert Zill.
Who?
Bert Zill.
Oh, yeah,
huh? How are you?
Very good, and you?
Who is this?
Bill Palmer.
Oh, Bill, how are you? I was in a couple of weeks ago, remember?
Yeah.